Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. He is...
Dr. Van Beek.
Hmm.
Oh, let's do Reverend Dr. Van
Beek. Reverend Dr. Van Beek is...
Yeah, because that's what I just signed this piece of paper with. I actually went Reverend Van Beek, DTH, Doctor of Theology.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, because yeah. They're earned. They're earned designations.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. And, you know, some people work hard for them.
Not anyone we know, but anyway. No, you worked for yours. I'm not sure I worked for mine, but
I did. I used to dream that somebody would be working on the same topic and die, and I just found their papers and I could just hand them in. Yeah.
He was
always needed a death portion to that.
Yeah. He was 92% done. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be glorious?
Oh yeah.
When I was doing my master's degree, I read a thesis that just tracked with my thesis all the way to the end. And then the guy said, but that was the old dispensation. And in this dispensation, that doesn't pan out. And I thought, oh, good. Oh, good. Fortunately, mine still works perfectly because of that one line.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, it was crazy stuff. Yeah. We are now in Esther chapter 9. So we're going to finish Esther tonight.
Yep.
And it's fairly simple. This is the Jewish people being able to defend themselves based on the letters that Xerxes had sent out. Mm. Remember, they rode the king's horses, and they were allowed to. The edict was like an extra edict onto his first one. The first one said you could kill all the Jews. The second one said the Jews can all defend themselves against anybody, remember, even against Persians, which we think is really, really important.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing now.
Okay. Cool. All right, folks, starting verse 1, chapter 9. On the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the edict commanded by the king was to be carried out. On this day, the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them. But now the tables were turned, and the Jews got the upper hand over those who hated them. The Jews assembled in their cities in all the provinces of King Xerxes to attack those determined to destroy them. No one could stand against them because the people of all other nationalities were afraid of them. And all the nobles of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and the king's administrators helped the Jews because fear of Mordecai had seized them. Mordecai was prominent in the palace, and his reputation spread throughout the provinces, and he became more and more powerful.
Pretty amazing little story, isn't it?
It really is.
Like the fear of the Jews was on all of these people.
Yeah.
You know? And I can hardly picture it unless you watch movies about Mossad, and then you're very scared of those people.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's just so intriguing the way they turn this story around. And that Mordecai is important in the palace.
Right.
And if you look at Jewish history, remember, after Esther, Zerubbabel is going to lead them back, and then later on Nehemiah is going to lead them back again. And why do the Jews have this place? Because of this stuff with Esther.
Oh, right. Makes it all the puzzle pieces fit together all of a sudden, right?
Yeah. So if you believe, remember again, the timing of this stuff is terrible. Like, it's really hard to fit the timing. Mm-hmm. But we know so little about Persian names and some of these dates that it's really tough to put that together. But it does show you that it wasn't just like Nehemiah just came out of the woodwork somewhere and the king went, hey, why don't you go back to Jerusalem? But there was this whole buildup to this thing that God was doing. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say that God was doing it because I believe that God was making this happen.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, verse 5. The Jews struck down all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them. And they did what they pleased to those who hated them. In the citadel,
don't want to think about what that might be.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. They made them watch awful TV shows from the 60s. No. In the citadel of Susa, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. They also killed
a bunch of guys.
I'm just going to go there because they're tough. Verse 10. The 10 sons of Haman, the sons of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, they did not lay their hands on the plunder.
Intriguing, eh? That's almost an Abrahamic thing. Remember, you guys keep the stuff. I'll just take something to tithe to God, and I don't want it.
I'm good with it, yeah. Right? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Verse 11. The number of those killed in the citadel of Susa was reported to the king that same day. The queen said to Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman in the citadel of Susa. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? What is your petition? It will be given to you. What is your request? It will also be granted."
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. It's not.
So they've killed them all. What else do you want?
Yeah. Yeah.
He really liked Esther.
Yeah. Esther didn't miss a beat here because verse 13, "If it pleases the king," Esther answered, "give the Jews in Susa permission to carry out this day's edict tomorrow also. And let Haman's 10 sons be impaled on poles."
Yeah, you're not going to say she was a soft woman.
No. Once she found her voice, oh, did she find her voice?
Wow. So people in this generation would probably say, well, if I lived back then, I wouldn't do that stuff. They didn't live back then.
No. That's presentism at its best.
That's right. So it is kind of neat. Yeah. What's happened. I still prefer gallows because impaled still is much for me. But
no.
But impaled is probably more correct.
Yeah. Verse 14 now, folks. So the king commanded that this be done. The edict was issued in Susa, and they impaled the 10 sons of Haman. The Jews in Susa came together on the 14th day of the month of Adar, and they put to death 300 men, but they did not lay their hands on the plunder. Yet again.
No, we're not touching the stuff.
16. Meanwhile, the remainder of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also assembled to protect themselves and get relief from their enemies. They killed 75,000 of them, but did not lay their hands on the plunder. This happened on the 13th day of the month of Adar. On the 14th, they rested and made it a day of joy and feasting and joy.
Yeah. I think they would have had to go somewhere else for the feasting and joy.
Yeah.
It would smell bad there.
Little much.
Just roll a guy over and sit on him.
push that guy out of the way. Yeah, don't worry about the flies. It's fine. Okay. 18 now. The Jews in Susa, however, had assembled on the 13th day and the 14th, and then on the 15th, they rested and made it a day of joy, or feasting and joy. That is why the rural villages, those living in or rural Jews, those living in villages, observe the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day of joy and feasting, a day for feasting, a day of forgiving presents to each other. Oh.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? It's sort of an explanation of Purim, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But why do we do this on different days? Well, they finished killing their guys and they stopped on the 14th and here... You know, they had an extra day of killing, and then on the 15th, they celebrated. Yeah. Pretty amazing, actually.
Okay, 20. Mordecai recorded these events, and he sent letters to all the Jews throughout the provinces of King Xerxes, near and far, to have them celebrate annually the 14th and the 15th days of the month of Adar, as the time when the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month when their sorrow was turned to joy, or turned into joy, and their mourning into a day of celebration. He wrote to them to observe the days as days of feasting and joy, and giving presents of food to one another, and gifts to the poor.
Okay. Very Christmassy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. 23. So the Jews agreed to continue the celebration they had begun, doing what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, son of Apatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them, and had cast the pur, that is the lot, for their ruin and destruction. But when the plot came to the king's attention, he issued written orders that the evil scheme Haman had devised against the Jews should come back onto his own head, and he and his sons should be impaled on poles. Thanks, Esther. Therefore, these days are called Purim, from the word pur, or pur. Because of everything written in this letter, and because of what they had seen and what had happened to them, the Jews took it upon themselves, or on themselves, to establish the custom that they and their descendants, and all who joined them, should without fail observe these 2 days every year in the way prescribed and at the time appointed. These days should be remembered and observed in every generation by every family in every province and in every city. And these days of Purim should never fail to be celebrated by the Jews, nor should the memory of these days die out among their descendants.
Yeah, and that's the celebration that's gone on, right? Jesus even, I think, was part of Purim. And I was going to look that up, and I forgot. But we talked about that one other time when we were talking about some of the things that Jesus did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, 29. So Queen Esther, daughter of Abithail, Abihail, along with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm the second letter concerning Purim. And Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of Xerxes' kingdom, words of goodwill and assurance to establish these days of Purim at their designated times, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had decreed them, and as they had established for themselves and their descendants in regard to their times of fasting and lamentation. Esther's decree confirmed these regulations about Purim as it was written down in the records.
Yeah, and many people think that is why Esther was kept in Scripture, because it is a development of why they had this celebration of Purim. Mm. Remember we said earlier on, you know, nobody wants to give up a really good celebration. And so, and the issue with Esther was always that God is not mentioned in Esther, and some of the people have problems with that in the canonization of it. But it just had such a strong, godly aspect to it about the leading of the Jewish people. And it's their feast.
All right. So here we are at chapter 10.
Chapter 10. Oh, by the way, I did take a look, and we're not sure if Jesus celebrated Purim in John 5. There's an argument whether it was Sukkoth or Purim or something else, but it may have been Purim that he was. Because they call it the Lesser Festival, by the way.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. It's not as important as like Day of Atonement or
things
like that, of course.
Yeah. But still, something to celebrate.
Oh, if you can't celebrate a good slaughter.
We were going to be annihilated, but we actually got to kill them all instead.
Instead. And really, if we're being, you know, a little more careful for our audience, we'd say it's just God's deliverance of his people at this time.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so let's read this little bit of chapter 10. It isn't much, folks. King Xerxes imposed a tribute throughout the entire empire to its distant shores, and all his acts of power and might, together with a full account of the greatness of Mordecai, whom the king had promoted, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Media and Persia? Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews, and held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews, because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of all the Jews.
Pretty good story. He's almost comparable to Joseph.
Right.
You know, who became second over Egypt.
Right, yeah.
And Mordecai, you know, second over even a greater, actually, place than Egypt was.
Yeah.
You know, it was a greater nation than Egypt was.
Yeah.
They actually, at this point in time, I think they owned Egypt. Because they go all the way down to Cush, right? They're holding. So, so pretty amazing thing about a guy named Mordecai.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And just living his life. Doing his thing, not bowing down to an idiot, and God raised him up.
Yeah.
Could it happen for us?
No, I think we always have to bow down to an idiot in our life. I joke. But, okay.
So, pretty exciting story, and I'm glad your mom talked us into doing Esther.
Yeah.
That turned out to be a great call.
Yeah, no, it really was. But thanks for that. It's fascinating to tie that into Israel's history as they come back into the Promised Land after being exiled, tied a little bit back to Christ, and you know possibly he celebrated that in John 5, like you said, and just how we see that God is faithfully working among his people throughout the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Oh, as always, we appreciate Larry's wisdom, folks. And as always, in addition to that, we're thankful that you listen to us. if you didn't listen, we probably would stop eventually doing this. But, you know, for a long time, we'd hang on. We'd soldier on. So, but we're thankful that you encourage us by your listening. We do see those stats, and they are encouraging to us. But we'll be back next week. I have no idea what we're doing, but somebody does. It's not Larry and I.
We may have to finish our minor prophets. We did drop away from them for a while.
That's true. We might have to come back to our minor prophets. Good idea.
And then we better get back to the New Testament.
But until then, folks, I was Steve. He was Larry. This was the Apocalypse.